Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. On this one, we're going to be talking with the guys from Heartland Bowhunter. Greg and I sat down with them at the ATA show and just kind of talked about what they've been doing recently, what they have planned for the future, and just kind of listened to their stories about hunting. So before we get into the podcast, I want to go through the promo codes to save you guys some money. Turkey season's approaching here, so if you want to save any money on Woodhaven custom calls, you can use the code THP2018. If you want to save 20% on the Onyx Hunt app, you can use the code THP. If you need any new trail cameras, we can save you 10% off Exodus trail cameras if you use the code THP10. If you need any new bow accessories, we can save you 15% off Trophy Ridge products if you use the code THP15. If you want to save 20% off Vortex apparel, you can use the code THP20. And finally, we've got a bunch of new merchandise back on the website, so if you want to check that out, go over to our website, thehuntingpublic.com, and give it a gander. All right, let's get to the action. All right, guys. Hey, we're here at the ATA show. We've got Michael Hunsucker and Sean Luchtel from Heartland Bowhunter. How are you guys?
Good, man.
Doing good. Enjoying your time here?
Yeah, first day. Breaking it in.
Yeah.
Still fresh.
Yeah, we're still fresh and smiling and walking around. Yeah, peppy.
Not tired of
not
like
dragging
standing.
Red eye. Yeah. With broken feet, but.
Yeah. By the end of it, like day three, you're like your feet are hurting and it gets a little rough standing and.
Oh yeah.
Kind of get a little winded out here, but yeah.
Ready to get back to the woods.
Yeah.
After
so
that.
You guys just said that you have 3 days left in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
So do you guys have plans for hunting those 3 days? You guys have some last-minute bucks you're trying to get after?
Yeah, I'm probably going to go with my dad. I haven't gone with him too much this year, really, and he wants to go, so I'm going to give it a shot. It's
cool.
Been slow this last month, I think.
Yeah.
It's been warm and whatnot, but
yeah,
weather's supposed to change, and it might happen. You never know.
That's what we all – it, like, never fails. Like, every year we, like, have whatever, just – warmer weather and then like come to ATA and like cold front snap.
Yeah, guaranteed.
Yeah. Guaranteed. And like we'll get cell cam photos like, what are we doing?
Yeah, right.
But it looks like it's gonna hit Saturday.
Nice.
And nice little cold front, so
cool.
We'll make the last few days decent, hopefully.
Yeah.
I'll probably go out with my wife, try to get her a buck. Now that the kids are grown up a little bit more, she's got a little more time to hunt, and
nice.
So we've been hunting hard and haven't had much opportunity, actually any opportunity this year for her, so we'll see. It's tough getting them in, you know, 30 and under. It's just tough.
Oh, yeah. So where have you guys hunted all this year? I know you hunted Iowa, right?
Yep. Yeah, we kicked things off, actually. Our first hunt this year was in Alaska, Kodiak Island.
Nice.
So Sean and I actually went to high school with a guy who guides up there, Cole Kramer. And I actually went on a bear hunt with him 2 or 3 years ago. And Sean and I went on a blacktail hunt with him probably 5 or 6 years ago. So we've been up there a couple times. And he would have us, you know, put in for mountain goat. And we were the kind of guys, like, you know, never been on a goat hunt or sheep hunt or any of that kind of stuff. But, like, obviously always love, you know, new experiences and adventures.
Yeah.
And so we put in and we put in as a party. So we would both draw. And so we've been putting in for several years. And this year was the first year we finally drew and did that hunt. And it was really cool. It was just a new experience. It was just extremely, you know, physical hunt, really rough terrain. But what was kind of nice was it wasn't high elevation like what we're used to doing, like high country hunts out west. Like it was, so you could actually breathe. So that was kind of
nice.
What
was the elevation then?
It was like between 3,500 and 4,000, I think.
Okay.
Well, that's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's Kodiak Island, so you're on the island, so straight up.
Yeah, you start at sea level and just.
You start at sea level. That's the main difference. Yeah.
Right.
But it was a cool experience. It was kind of crappy weather the first, we got fogged in and rained in the first, you know, 3 or 4 days, basically couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And finally it broke. And the previous few days, like we got like maybe like 30 minute break, so we kind of could spot them. And so we already knew where they were. So once the weather finally cleared up, we didn't waste any time. We got right on them and we were both able to get goats.
So, nice. So you guys drew the same tag the same year?
Right.
Is that something you were planning on doing or it just happened to be that
way?
Yeah,
we applied together as like a party. So like we either both don't draw or both do. And so,
cool.
It worked out.
Nice.
Worked out nicely.
So what's the goat's behavior at that time of year? Is there any breeding season involved or is it just pure spot and stock?
They're just hanging out,
just fine.
Man.
just
in the middle of the rocks or wherever they want to go for that matter.
Yeah.
And they're so, I don't know. They'll just slow, just move around, eat, lay down, That's so pretty much it.
The challenge isn't necessarily finding them. It's once you found them is figuring out a route to get to them.
Yep. Yeah, literally just getting to them is the biggest challenge. Yeah. Like, you know, they're not – we afterwards were like, you know, we've done a lot of mule deer hunts and, like, you know, like, oh, you mess up one thing on a mule deer stalk, game over. They're a little more acceptance of, you know, they accept that a little bit more. And if you do, you know, if they do see you or if you do screw up a stalk, like, they don't, like, tear out of the country. Mm-hmm. But they'll just, like, kind of slowly work up, because they have no natural predators at all.
Sure.
Besides bears, like, we'll mess with them a little bit, but they don't really catch them.
Yeah.
They just go up high to where the bears can't get.
Right.
Yeah. And so they know they're faster than you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's crazy to see the areas where they were hanging out at. You know, my goat was fairly, you know, fairly straightforward. You know, he didn't go too far, and, like, we were able to pack him out. Sean's went down into this, like, it was like a pack out from hell, man. Like,
it was tough.
It was just brutal.
Fun,
but that was one of those, it's one of those deals that, like, you know, you push yourself through that and, like, it sucks in the moment, but then you get it, you get done, and it's, you know, you feel better about it. You feel like, you know,
you've accomplished yourself something. And,
Yeah, and it's just so much different than what we grew up doing. You know, in the Midwest, whitetails, and you know, we're like, oh man, we gotta, like, carry our stand in, like, 3/4 of a mile, like, dang it, man. And then we're like, gosh, what are we even complaining about? You know, when you go doing something like that.
Yeah.
Was it ever scary at all? Like, were there ever points where you're like, whoa, like, if I fall off that, I'm going to be in bad shape?
Yeah, when we were, I want to say when we were packing out my goat, you were climbing with your hands and your feet, and you're on, it's where we were at wasn't, like, extremely rocky where we were hiking out of, but it was just moss, so you could grab it. But, I mean, if you fell back, you're gonna go a long way.
Yeah, I don't,
you're
like,
probably not gonna live.
That stuff doesn't make me that uncomfortable. But, like, we were packing out, and we kind of had to decide whether we wanted to go up or go down and then back up. And there was this grass chute, and I was like, oh yeah, I was like, I think we can get scale that pretty good, you know. And so I got going up it and literally dropped the trekking poles because it's so steep, and then literally just clawing on it.
Wow.
And, like, I'm going and, like, I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm like, I'm getting up there a little ways. I'm like, gosh, this is not good. And I, like, looked down. I was like, well, I'm like, I was too, like, it was easier at that point to continue to go up than to, like, try to go down. And so I ended up going up. And then I told the other guys, I was like, don't go this way. Like, it was crappy. But it was, like, one of those deals where, you know, the goat just went into a spot where it's just not meant to be. Like, humans aren't meant to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so funny because, like, you know, you look at it from a advantage point, and it doesn't look that bad. You're like, oh yeah, we could probably just go straight that way and, like, traverse a few hills, and it is not that way. You have to go all the way around and follow a ridge finger down, and just sketchy all around. But
so you spot one. How far do you spot it from? And then what's your move then?
It's always different. So you spot one, you're like, all right, well, first you gotta look at him and make sure it's a billy, which was very hard because some of the nannies look like billies, especially if you've never done it before.
They all have horns.
Right.
And so you figure that portion out, and then you try to figure out what else is there other than maybe the one or two or three that you see.
Because you're at risk of bumping
the other ones. Yeah, you don't want to bump them. And so, I mean, we might move closer and then get another eye on them and then figure out if it's doable or not. But I don't know. I'd say for the most part, as long as we found the billies that we wanted to go after, we could pretty much get in range. I mean, yeah, for sure, because the first afternoon I got a shot off, missed, but I mean, we were right on them, and then you killed yours the next morning.
Yeah.
And then the day after that I killed mine, so
yeah we weren't being extremely picky, you know, cause we never killed any mountain goat, and that, like, you know, as long as it's a solid billy, you know. And we had watched the way they would work every day, and they were, like, working up in these cliffs to bed. And so the day that Sean killed, we actually went all the way around in the first thing in the morning and beat them there and waited for them to come to us.
No kidding.
And so we were actually sitting on this rock cliff drop off, and you look down and you could see them coming. And Sean's billy that he ended up shooting comes all the way up and just beds right there below us.
No kidding.
And it was like, what was it, 30 or
45?
45 yards is what he was supposed to shoot it for because of the angle.
Uh-huh.
But it was really like 60, wasn't it?
Yeah, like 63
or
something.
Yeah, so it was just super, super steep.
Yeah.
So they travel in bachelor groups then, typically?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
These billies, there were a bunch of nannies and kids with them, though, like right up to the side. So it was just, I mean, the whole area that we were in was pretty target rich, which we didn't even necessarily know the first time, or as far as on that hunt, because it was our first time, but after that, I went on a hunt, a moose hunt, and I was talking to the guys there that do goat hunts, and I was telling them about it, and they're like, man, he's like, that's like goat heaven where you guys are. Like, there's goats everywhere. You don't get that very many places.
Most places.
So that was pretty neat. I mean, we had no idea. So
yeah.
It was fun. Yeah. It was a blast. I'd definitely do it again.
What was the date on that?
First,
I think is when we started. It was like the first week or something of September,
first week
I believe.
September. Yep. So. They opened earlier than that. I can't remember when they opened. Did he have a hunt before us?
Yeah.
He did have a hunt before us. So he did a hunt. I think it opens like end of October or end of August.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on through the month of September. So.
Sweet.
But it was like temperature-wise pretty comfortable. You know, it was, cool in the evenings and
just rains a lot.
It was it's Kodiak, so it's just wet and shitty all the time. But that's just how it goes.
Did you guys have any bear encounters when you're out there?
We didn't see one.
Really?
Nope. Saw some scat. Saw some blacktail bucks.
Yeah.
But
that's cool.
Yeah,
didn't see a bear skull.
Oh, we found a bear skull. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
That's sweet.
Pretty neat.
Well, speaking of bears, Mike had an epic bear hunt.
Yeah.
2 years ago now.
Yeah, I think it was two.
If people haven't watched that, is there anywhere you can find that? Even like a clip of.
Yeah, I mean, it's on
iTunes, perhaps.
Yeah,
like
it's
episode?
On iTunes.
Yeah.
It's on My Outdoor TV. There's some clips on my Instagram, I think. But yeah,
someone's
was
probably
crazy.
Already YouTubed it, like taking a video.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The footage of it is insane.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was.
That's, I think it's worth talking about that a little bit.
Yeah. No, it was. That was a same buddy of ours that we mm-hmm. hunted with. Did the bear hunt with, and always kind of wanted to do a bear hunt. And he's kind of known as the guy for shooting them with a bow. Most guys don't mess with it because it's an any weapon tag.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an outfitter and a guide and it's a 14-day season, the tag's good for 14 days. Like, okay, do you want to guide a bow hunter and grind it out for 14 days, or do you want to guide a rifle guy and kill him second or third day? So if I had a gun, I would have killed the first day.
Oh, wow.
Giant 10.5 foot. I mean, just giant.
Wow.
I had an encounter with the bow and I didn't get a shot off. I probably could have, but it's one of those situations where they're like, if you mess up and make a bad shot, the guide's going to shoot him with the gun. That's your bear.
Yeah, yeah.
Or ideally, he'll give you the gun and let you shoot him.
Right.
But worst case scenario, he's going to shoot him before he gets in the brush.
Right.
Because that's your bear. You're not going to go in the brush after a wounded bear. So, so that first encounter, that and also Cole just slow played it the whole time. He's like, I'm like, we're going after this bear slowly, and I'm like, are we killing this bear? Like, how big is he? I can't tell. You know, we're looking through a scope. First day bear hunting, and he's like. Yeah, like if he comes in good, close and broadside, we'll shoot him, whatever. So the encounter happens, and he came. I thought he was gonna circle downwind, so I was ready for him coming this way. He goes this way, so I had to like shift when he got close. Mm. He saw me and was like knew something wasn't right and kind of slowly turned and left. And like if that would have happened later in the hunt, I would have shot. I would have squeezed one off. But first day I didn't. But afterwards he's like, oh. He's like, man, that was a giant. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that? Like, he's used to like guiding clients and doesn't want to get them all amped up. I need to know, like in my mind, if I would have known, like make this happen, I would have made
aggressive.
It happen.
Yeah.
You know. But I'm like, first day, no problem. So 12 days later, freaking living in a little shanty and no showers and camping out there and just starting to stink and get at each other's nerves. And glassing, it was a spring hunt, so days were like 17 hours of daylight. It's like we're glassing for like 14 hours, like just waiting. It's like, it's honestly like one of the most slowest, like boring hunt until it happens.
Until it's
and then
not.
It's the most, until it's not. Yeah. So, but we got up on that bear the last day and called him. What's cool is for bow hunting, he uses like a fawn distress call.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so in the spring, the bears were out just kind of like rummaging around, basically looking for any food they could find.
Right.
They had a really bad winter kill the year before, so they were just like, they were usually, I guess, they're up high usually. And for some reason, like, he was like, oh, the bears are down low. Well, they had a bad winter kill, and they were just rummaging through all the carcasses down there. And so, anyway, we got up and we watched this bear, and we followed him. And he actually ended up bedding in this alder thicket, which we didn't know. We just got, like, we were, like, literally walking right behind him the whole time. He was feeding into the wind. And they're super, like, hyper-focused. So, like, they're, like, walking and looking right in front of them. They don't care. They're not worried about any predators. And so they have the wind in their favor. That's all they care about.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to, like, literally parallel him, just follow him. And we finally got close enough to where, like, all right, we're going to sit down and call. Of course, we got to set up cameras and do all that stuff. And
right.
so it took us a little while. And he went into this alder patch. And we started calling. And we called for, I think, 10 minutes and nothing. We're like, dang, maybe he kept on going. And I was like, well, maybe he's bedded down and, just doesn't care enough to come.
Mm-hmm.
And that first encounter we had with that bear day one, Cole like growled like another bear, and that's what turned him. Like he wouldn't come to the stress call, but when he growled, he turned him because he was a big dominant bear.
Sure.
This bear, we weren't sure. We're like, you know, he's like, he may not be dominant. He definitely wasn't as big as that first one, but he was still a big bear. But we weren't sure if the growl would work or would spook him, but he started growling. Sure enough, we heard sticks break. And here he comes. And he comes in, and he gets to about 30, just walking straight at us, and then he sees us. And so he kind of gets curious and just comes right to us and gets to all the way. I come to full draw when he was like 30, hoping he would like kind of skirt by broadside.
Right.
And it came straight at us, and you can't shoot him facing because their head is like this big. And it blocks their whole body. And he gets to like 12 yards, and there's like this little mound, and he like puts his front paws on it, like stands up. And and I was kind of not expecting Cole to say shoot him because like frontal shot.
Yeah.
But he exposed his chest, and he's like, shoot him. And I was like, oh, okay. And so like I'm a full draw, and I'm like, I'm looking through my peep and my sight, and all I see is brown fur.
Yeah.
And so I literally like do this. I'm like, I think I'm aiming good enough. He's like, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. I'm like, okay. And so I shoot him, and I hit him. I actually missed to the right of where I was aiming, right in the chest. Ended up hitting him in the heart. And
yeah.
Blood. I saw the blood just shoot out instantly. The arrow passed all the way through, came out his hindquarter, and like he just like went like front flipping down the mountain and was dead like in no time.
Yeah.
Was he saying shoot him because he was like, we're about to get ripped up by this bear, or was he saying this is your opportunity?
No, yeah, he was just like saying go ahead and shoot. Yeah, because he had a 475 H&H. I don't know, big gun.
Yeah.
You know. actually, I gave him trouble about it. It was not over my shoulder. It was laying on the ground. I was like, how quickly are you going to grab that and shoot him?
But, are they like pretty prone to attack out there? Are they like,
no, that's what the thing is, like
more curious than anything, I'm assuming. But
yeah, I think you never know with a bear's temperament.
Sure.
But people are like, oh my god, 12 yards, like weren't you freaking out? And which I was, like it wasn't like, it was kind of a weird feeling. It wasn't like a excitement or like nervous. It was almost like just like everything was like slow motion, and you're like, don't screw this up kind of deal. Like it got kind of uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah.
Almost. But yeah, I mean, like honestly, if there was a bear we weren't going to shoot, you know, if we went, you know, hey bear, hey bear, and like most of the time I'm sure he's just gonna turn and run.
Is this a Kodiak brown bear?
Yep,
is that correct?
Brown bear.
Yeah,
yep.
Because I don't think they're as aggressive
as a grizzly.
Grizzlies.
Right,
yeah.
They're not. Yep.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be 12 yards from a grizzly.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Not even
with
a gun in my hand.
Nope.
Yeah, and so, yeah, a lot of it depends. You know, usually those things happen when, you know, you walk up on a sow with cubs you startle one. You know, that's a different story. So, but still, it was
I'm sure it was pretty
close.
Intense.
Yeah. Cole's guided some recurve hunts for brown bears and even a longbow guy. So, you know, they get close.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So
did you ever
– go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, did you ever – when you guys started Heartland Bowhunter, I don't think we touched – I mean, everybody knows it.
Yeah.
You guys are Heartland
Bowhunter.
But anyways – when you guys started that out, did you ever see yourself hunting Alaska, you know, whatever, 15 years later? You know, because you were just out of high school when you started Heartland, or college?
College.
When you started Heartland.
In college, just out of high school, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, it was always like a dream. I mean, I didn't go on the bear hunt, but still.
But he went on a moose hunt this year.
Yeah.
Kind of the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But no, definitely not. I mean, it is a dream come true. You never would have thought that was going to happen. But
yeah.
Yeah, we just started out, just like Warp and some of you guys, just like filming for fun. And Sean and I did it in high school. And actually, Warp and I met in college right when we were getting started. And I remember him coming over and sharing some of his turkey hunting videos. And we were early on. I had a handy cam literally duct taped to my stabilizer filming doe kills. And Sean and I started filming, you know, each other with the crappy little tree arms and stuff. And but it was just cool. It was just exciting to, like, capture that stuff and share it. And not a lot of people were doing it at that time. It was just kind of – it was cool. I mean, we have some old videos that I don't even know. I need to try to look up, but like just like us walking around filming stuff, just like it'd be funny to look back at now.
Oh, yeah. Me and my buddies did the same thing. It was just like, hey, you know, we could take my dad's camera out. It's like, let's like go shoot rabbits, you know? And like we're just out there filming the goofiest stuff, but it's like you look back and you're like, what were we doing? You know, like,
oh, I know.
Like, what, you know, everything about it's funny, but you got to start somewhere and you got to, like, you know, I guess keep following that dream. And at some, you know, at some point, I think if you educate yourself enough on how to film, edit, whatever, it's like it's totally possible to do this type of stuff.
For sure.
But yeah. And it's cool. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, we obviously started out just deer hunting and stuff. But like, you know, through the show and through what we've done, have opportunities have come along for us to hunt a lot of different places, a lot of different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think whitetails still are, you know, close to heart for us for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it is exciting to try new things, do new stuff.
No doubt.
Yeah, new experiences are
yeah.
awesome.
So what else this season have you done?
Oh, Sean did the moose hunt.
I went on a moose hunt for 10 days. Never got a shot at one.
Where was that at?
It was in BC, northern BC, right up by the Yukon. And, I mean, I'd never been on a moose hunt, let alone filmed one or anything. Trying to think if I'd ever really seen very many. Not like a Yukon or British Columbia moose or Canadian moose. But, yeah, it was fun. Saw a lot of moose, just not the one that we were wanting to kill. We saw one that we would have gone after, but he was over a mile away. And we were talking about bears. I think the coolest part of that entire hunt was we saw a grizzly on the second to last day. Big, big male. And he was like 200 yards just cruising through the brush. And our guy, Dan, he's like, well, I'll call to him. I was like, all right. So he does a cow call. And that bear, like, turned on a dime and came straight to us, right at us, and, like, dips down in this valley. And I'm like, this is sweet, you know. I think that was the only bear that we saw, and that was the first grizzly I'd ever seen. And he came right into 30 yards and stood up on his hind legs and looked at us and then turned around and ran off. But that was a huge adrenaline.
Yeah. Like, oh, I bet.
He had a gun. I mean, otherwise I would have been like, no, don't call to him.
Yeah.
But, and you can't shoot them there unless they're threatening you.
Right.
But, yeah, it was it was neat. That was really, really fun. Yeah, like I said, we didn't get a moose, but seeing as many moose as we did and being close to some, they're incredible animals. They're huge.
Oh, yeah.
I had no clue they were that big until you see them in person.
Mm-hmm. Are you planning on doing that again next year, or is that a tag that you got to draw?
No, I didn't have to draw it. It was a paid hunt, and it was an expensive one. And I'm not sad that I didn't get one, but I really just wanted the meat, so I probably wouldn't go there again necessarily to BC. Mm-hmm. I'd probably go somewhere just to get a moose.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, we've never – Skyler shot a moose
years
ago on our show, and it was like a hunter host deal up in somewhere in Canada. Mm-hmm. So just Canada moose, nothing fancy, not a big bull by any means, but, I mean, just an incredible hunt. Just came in, in the swamp, just splashing, and shot him at like 20 yards.
Yeah,
like just,
yeah, it was awesome. You would have known by his reaction that it was a younger moose. You'd have thought it was a 60-incher or something.
Yeah.
Like, it was awesome.
Yeah,
him and Clayton, I'm assuming, was with it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
yeah. I ate some moose while I was up there, and man, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's.
See, you're bummed that you didn't fill a tank. You didn't get the meat.
Yeah, I really, really.
Yeah, no, that's sweet.
And I learned a lot about it. We flew up there, and they're like, oh, well, if you fly, like. Yeah, you can bring some home, but you have to freeze it and then pack dry ice and all this stuff. And they're like, and then you'll have to find a way to give away the rest. So I was like, give it away. I don't want to give any of it away. So on a moose hunt looking forward, or in the future looking forward, I would definitely drive wherever I'm going, no matter how far, just because I want to bring it all.
No,
I
respect that for sure.
So
that's cool. So it does taste really good. I don't think I've ever had moose.
Well, Scott Pruka shot one. I know he's fed it to us before. I thought you would have had it by now, but
I don't think that I've ever had
good.
It.
Yeah, I had some of Skyler's. Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's probably my favorite as far as out of the deer family.
Yeah, cool. So what is that like a little bit? Just in September, I'm assuming, early September.
Yeah, that was
still?
That was actually middle of September into October.
Wow.
And that was another wet hunt.
Yeah.
And we were out there for, like I was saying, for 10 days, and you carry everything you have on your back, so
mm-hmm.
it was a tough one, but fun. Just like anything, like once you get done with that type of stuff, you respect everyday life so much more. Like the conveniences of everything.
Mm-hmm. Those adventure hunts, like it's so funny. Like in the video and the photos, like it looks so beautiful. Alaska's like just perfect example.
Yeah,
looks incredible, beautiful, and like, but then you're like there, and you're like, huh. Like, this is not how it looks.
Yeah.
Like it
looks nice, but it feels wet.
It feels really
and cold, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could have, like, the worst, nasty winter, snow, and blowing wind, and, like, it looks really cool. Looks beautiful still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it sucks still.
Yeah.
Really bad.
And we're so used to our busy lifestyles with everything going on all the time. Every day, days fly by. Well, there they go slow.
Yeah.
Because you don't have your phone. You don't have anything like that. And so... like, we'd start fires, and that was, like, our source of entertainment.
They're playing tic-tac-toe in the dirt.
Yeah. Like, everything slows down. So,
did you go right into whitetail from there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had an elk hunt in September. Nice. Well, it was kind of – I I drew an elk tag for Montana, and I had applied. I kept my general tag for deer. And I went ahead and applied for antelope tag. So I actually had three tags, and was just kind of – I was mainly going to focus on elk, but I had a deer and an antelope tag in my pocket. So spent most of the time – actually, I actually drew this tag 2 years in a row, which is unheard of, in the Missouri Breaks. And so I kind of knew, you know, a lot more about the area, you know, than from the year before. And so I was kind of excited to mess around with some of the mule deer because we'd seen them the year before, but I didn't have a tag. I'd already shot a buck. And so I went out there and hunted mule deer for an antelope for the first couple days, waiting on the elk to get kind of fired up. And I don't have any patience for antelope hunting. I've never killed an antelope, but I'm like, I'm not going to sit in a water hole to wait for one. Like, I just don't. I mean, I would, I guess, if I really wanted to kill one. But in a lot of areas, that's really the only way. But I just had a decoy in my bow. I was like, I'm just going to walk at them, every single one. I'll do it 20 times, and maybe one will act right, you know.
Yep.
And so I chased antelope all over the country and never got a shot. But I actually did get kind of close a couple times. I got to the point where I was like, okay, well, I'm spooking them with a decoy, so I'm just going to spot and stalk them, hide behind the hill, and then pop up and just utilize the decoy so they don't freak out. So maybe they'll give me a look and stick around for a second. But never did get an opportunity. Had a couple of really close stalks on mule deer. And so I started kind of elk hunting basically in the morning, in the evening, and then in the midday just messing with deer. So we'd go in, elk hunt, we'd hike out, mess with the deer, and then go back in and elk hunt. And I ended up shooting a bull on the last day of my elk hunt. It was like the last day basically. I could have maybe squeezed in another half day or something, but
been forced.
I mean, the bull, I don't know what the deal was. They were, I guess, just locked down with the cows, and they weren't coming to calls real great. And so this bull was bugling in his bed midday. The one day we didn't go after mule deer, I was like, let's just sit. We were hiking back, and we let out a bugle just for the heck of it. It was like 10 in the morning, and he was bugling in his bed, answering like crazy. And so we set up and called, really similar to the bull I killed the year before, but he was in his bed, wouldn't come out, but he would bugle and answer. So we basically got to where, you know, the crest, and I crested over and like was able to spot him where he was at, and decided to make a stalk on him. So we circled around, and by the time we got in position and had called a few times and all that stuff, it had gotten to be, you know, into the afternoon. And so I snuck up to where we were probably, I don't know, 60 or 70 yards from him, and they got up to start feeding and started leaving. And so I was kind of glad, actually, because I think it's a lot of times it's easier to stalk while they're walking and moving. But they started going straight away from us, and I was like, oh, crap. And they were going up this huge, you know, ravine. And so, like, I kind of did a big, huge circle, went around and actually cut them off, and just kind of one of those blind luck deals. Like, I was, like, stalking over the hill, and I just see this cow head pop out at, like, 30. And I was like, oh, gosh. So I hit the dirt. No, she was further than that. She was, like, probably 60. I hit the dirt. And Brandon, who was filming me, set up the tripod right there. Like, once we ducked down, we were below her head, kind of. She couldn't see us. So he set up the tripod right there and then, like, popped it up. Once she put her head down, he popped it up. And I actually dropped down and went around and got up closer. And because she was, at, like, she would have been, like, 20 from me, but the bull came out, like, 45 or 50, something like that. And ended up drawing back and getting a shot at him. And it was crazy. I actually hit him just a tiny bit far forward in the shoulder. And I instantly saw the arrow snap off. And, like, you know elk, like, you just don't want to hit him in the shoulder. And I'm shooting 475 grain arrow with a bunch of weight forward. Like, I'm shooting a heavy setup for that specifically, but still shooting a 2-inch expandable broadhead. Like, just like, ugh, and my heart sank. I saw the arrow. And he trots back a few steps and stands there and looks back at me and almost acts like gut shot. Like, you know, sometimes they don't know what happened. He's like looking, he's chewing his cud. I'm like, what the heck? And he starts picking his arm up, dropping it. And I'm just watching blood just shoot out. I'm like, oh, sweet. Like, awesome. So, like, I reached down to grab another arrow, and I realized I left my quiver. I never shoot with a quiver on. I left my quiver back with Brandon. And so I duck below his eyesight, loop around, grab an arrow, come back, grab the whole quiver.
Yeah.
Knocked another arrow and stood up and was able to shoot him at, like, 45 or something like that. He was, like, working his way away. And hit him perfect double lung, and he ended up crashing like right there. So
it
was pretty crazy. But the first shot, when we gutted him and everything, and it got one lung at least. So it would have killed him. But those elk are tough on one lung. So you know, we would have definitely had to wait, you know, overnight or at least, you know, 6-7 hours. And so I was much happier to have him down in the daylight. So it was pretty cool. So that was kind of the end of my Montana trip. I didn't didn't fill the deer or the antelope tag, but I had fun. I had fun spooking them all over the countryside.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's I mean, it's impressive that you were able to even hunt both in the same. I mean, it shows
it's cool area,
pretty
yeah.
game-rich
yeah.
environment.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's yeah, literally all both. Three. It's basically the breaks. So, like, elk are in the breaks when it drops off.
Mm-hmm.
You come up, and it's like kind of I don't even know what you'd call it, just kind of almost like it's not sand hills, but it looks like the sand hills.
Yeah.
And then there's this field. And so it's crazy up there. It's like flat, 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 all these ag fields. And then just all of a sudden, doosh, drops off into the breaks. And it's wild. It's the opposite of mountains. Just inverse.
Yeah.
So now that you guys have hunted a lot of different species, do you have a favorite style of hunting? I mean, you guys have done really well in western Nebraska, like spot and stock mule deer.
I don't know.
It's hard to beat.
Yeah. I enjoy tree stand hunting quite a bit, too.
Yeah.
I hunted in westernish Kansas this year for whitetails.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's kind of a mixture because we didn't spot and stalk or anything, but it was pretty open in areas. And then there's river bottoms and stuff like that. But just, I don't know, you can't beat the tree stand hunt. And just going in there and picking a property apart, just like what you guys do all the time, whether it be private or public, that's what's fun, just figuring things out. And it's just different terrain, so everything's different, just like you guys know, everywhere you guys go, just figuring everything out and learning. That's probably, I don't know, the best part about all of it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's Western
process.
Or Western. Yeah, the whole process.
The whitetail thing seems to be more of a chess match,
mm-hmm.
and the mule deer is more like checkers. Like, you know, it just happens quick.
Yeah,
it's like
true.
It's like
yeah.
mm-hmm. unfolds a lot faster. And, like,
right.
I mean, that's one thing I do. I mean, I love the adrenaline rush of spot and stalk.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that you can make something happen.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
I don't care how bad you want it in the whitetail woods. You can't make it happen. Like, you can't just go walk around and, like, I mean, you can get aggressive, obviously.
I do that.
But how's that working out for you?
Okay. Well, actually.
Well, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, it's just so much different. Like, they're just so visible. Mule deer and elk and, you know, their whitetails could hide in timber and you don't even know. So. But yeah, it
takes a lot more patience probably with whitetails.
Yeah, 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 it's just it's a slower process for sure,
Yeah.
It's not as like, you know, when it's open, you know, it's more of just patient sitting back, like watching, waiting for something to unfold. But if it's thicker, you know, obviously it's just like you got to get in there and you got to be slow with them and move kind of in their area. But yeah, it definitely is a different game when you get out in that open stuff for sure.
Yeah.
But
that's cool.
Absolutely.
So, plans for like next year, what do you guys have upcoming that you're looking forward to?
I don't know. I should draw an Iowa tag.
Yeah, and you hunted in Iowa this year too, right?
Yep. I hunted, I had a heck of a whitetail season this year.
Yeah.
One of my best ever, so.
Where did you hunt whitetail this season, I guess, before we get into next year first?
For me, I think it was just Missouri and Kansas. Yeah, but for him,
I hunted Colorado, Kansas, and Iowa.
That's
and Missouri. I didn't spend a ton of time in Missouri.
And Texas.
I forgot I went to Texas too. Yeah, yeah, I've been all over the dang place. But had a good year overall. For sure. Yeah, I shot my biggest whitetail ever in Colorado.
Yeah, I saw a picture
cool.
of that.
And that was really cool because it was on the eastern plains and they had both mule deer and whitetail.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty. And I drew the tag, so, like, if you draw, you can get a – I'm not sure how it works, but I drew the tag that it was any species, so I could shoot either one. My buddy, who has the ranch, had a – I don't know if it was a landowner tag or a different tag, but he was – oh, it was a rifle tag, and it was whitetail only rifle. So it kind of depends. So, like, he had to – this. I had an encounter with this giant, like, 200-inch drop-time muley, and he had that same mule deer buck come by him like at 100 yards with his rifle, but he couldn't shoot him
because
he had a whitetail only.
Yeah.
So.
That's right. That was on your IG story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a crazy series of hunts where you've seen giant whitetails and giant mule deer.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, I think I killed my buck on like the fifth day, and like the first 2 days, like not much. Like, we had him on camera, but like not much daylight movement. We weren't seeing much from stands. And then like the third day, like just everything – hell broke loose.
Yeah.
Like, they were everywhere.
Yeah.
And like I saw, you know, two or three shooter whitetails, two big mule deer.
Right.
And granted, it's eastern plains wide open, so we're seeing a lot of area. But it was just like, for whatever reason, they just all started moving. Next day, nothing. Morning hunt, afternoon hunt, next morning hunt, nothing. I was like, what is going on? I was like, that had to be a fluke deal. Like, I don't know. Like, there was elk that run through that river bottom. I was like, I don't know if the elk maybe stirred them up or something stirred them up or somebody bumped them. I was like, I don't know what happened, but it was like, it was weird to me that like one night we saw all these shooters and then we weren't seeing any other night basically. And then the same thing happened the night I killed.
Right.
We just saw, I think, two other whitetail bucks that were shooters, another mule deer buck that was a shooter. And then I actually had that big whitetail, 180-inch whitetail, and that 200-inch muley converge. They were both coming to the – it was a levee. They were both coming to the, across the levee to drink water at the same time. Like, unbelievable. And, like, the whitetail had us pinned down. So we were set up to kill him because he showed up first. But then the mule deer started coming. And it was – he kind of came downwind. It was just, like, onto us. And so we couldn't shift, even if I wanted to shoot the mule deer, couldn't shift to shoot him. But literally had to, I had a 180-inch whitetail at like 17 yards is what I shot him at, and had the mule deer probably like 25, like literally right there. Yeah.
So were you guys set up or?
We were in a stand.
Okay.
Yeah, we were stand hunting even for the mule deer. Yeah, it was just kind of one of those deals that
they're coming to water.
There was a levee, and like it was all all irrigated fields down there. And this was a ranch that my buddy had just got that they were using for alfalfa production and for. Winter pasture for cattle, and so I kind of expected there to be like lush alfalfa field. Yeah. Well, they just got this ranch, and the people that had it before only owned it for a right of way for the water, and because they had a feedlot north of it or south of it, whichever direction, and so they let it go. And so they had these huge pivots and stuff, but there was not much food on this place at all, so it was mainly cover, which turned out to be just fine, I guess. But we went along this levee, and you could just see these beat down trails, and so I had like 6 trail cameras on this levee. And every day they bed in like this nasty tall stuff. So every day I would drive the levee, check every single camera, see which deer crossed to go. Because they would bed across the levee and then come out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of played that cat and mouse back and forth game. Right. But it was cool. It was something completely different than I'd ever done before. So.
Yeah. Eastern Colorado is definitely a weird place.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Like it's wild.
Pretty barren, and then all of a sudden you get water, and it's like, oh, that's where all the animals are.
Yep. Yeah.
No yeah. Kidding. It was crazy. We never saw any elk, but had trail cam pictures of them. I was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
I can't in my mind picture an elk coming out right here. Like, I just can't.
So that was that tag hard to get? I'm sure that took at least 5 years, didn't it?
No, it was – I think I had – I had hunted 2 or 3 years before, so I think I had 2 or 3 points.
Okay.
So it wasn't terrible. I think there's a lot of different units, if
I
remember right.
Yeah, there's so much. Yeah.
And so, like, I was surprised as, like, actually the unit that I had was, like, I think split by the river. And so I only had the one side of the river. And I was like, dang, this unit is really small for you think Colorado would be big. But I guess because the river system has all the game, they really split it up, I guess.
Yeah, those Eastern Colorado units are, like, super small. And they're, from what I've heard, they're... Yeah, it can be tough to get the tag at least.
Sure, yeah, especially if you get into one where a lot of people are applying.
Right.
And, there's a lot of hunters or a lot of opportunity there. So.
So, you had Iowa this year. You have Iowa.
I'll have Iowa next year. Hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why I wouldn't. But
it's always a toss up at this point. It sounds like.
Yeah. You just never know.
Sounds like it's getting harder and harder.
I've heard of people not getting it on 4. Yeah. 4 points, but. Most people seem to.
Depends on the zone, I guess, too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Zone 5 is usually the hardest draw. Zone 4 and 3 are a little easier, aren't they?
Yeah.
And the northern zones are probably way easier.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, what was it, about 15, 20 years ago, I guess where I grew up along the Missouri River, you could get, my dad would bow hunt Iowa. He could get it for $150 and drew almost every year.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not like that anymore. Yeah.
No. No, definitely not.
They're in high demand now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You grew up in Nebraska, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up right along the Missouri River, and I could see, sitting in my tree stand in Nebraska, I could see over into the Lusk Hills of Iowa.
Yeah.
And we had, friends that hunted over there, and of course we're killing big deer, every year in and year out. And we're, the upper end deer for where we're hunting is 130-inch, 3-year-old type deer. I mean, that was, top end deer in the area that we were hunting. So it's just... It's interesting contrast, crossing the river.
Yeah,
no doubt.
The quality of hunting.
Yeah, and you talk about crossing the river. At least there's like something dividing it. We talk about Missouri and Iowa, literally. There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's no physical border, just the state line.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like that makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, yeah. No, it is interesting.
They're doing some stuff right. I know that.
You guys are in northern Missouri, right?
Yeah.
That's where you're from.
We live in Kansas City area, but our property that we hunt most of the time is in northern Missouri. Yeah.
Sweet.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have places kind of all over here and there, but our main farm was up in northern Missouri. Yeah.
So, Kansas, how did Kansas go?
It was awesome. I had a guy reach out to me who's now my friend on Instagram, was like, hey, man, if you want to come hunt, you can. And I already had the tag because I was going to hunt with our friends at Heartland Pride Outfitters out that way. So I got to looking at his Instagram. His name's Cole Shoemaker. And I was like, man, he's got some really good deer, like pretty cool setup. I think I'll give it a shot. So I was like, yeah, I want to come hunt with you, you know. He's like, you can shoot whatever. And I'm like, well, no, I'll shoot whatever you know, would want me to or whatever. He's like, no, whatever makes you happy, shoot. I'm like, okay, great. And he's like, I have stands up, but you hang your own stands. Do your own thing, you know. You're welcome here, whatever. Do whatever you want. So I'm like, all right. And so that's how it was, man. We went in there, and he showed me some trail camera photos he had of deer and what was around. And he's like, just do your thing. And so we went in there, and the very first afternoon we got there, I want to say it was at like 2-3 o'clock, so it was too late to get out. I was like, I want to hang a stand. So we went right out behind their cabin and went over a few draws and hung a stand in a cedar tree, which, I mean, you guys know, we don't usually hang stands in cedar trees, but that's all that was there. And we hunted that, I think, with the right wind for a couple days, and then the wind switched, and we went down into this river bottom and hunted for a couple days. And we had some really awesome hunts. It was a great time. And then I think, like, day 4 or 5, the wind switched back, and I went back to that cedar tree and saw our first shooter that morning, and he was coming down the hill, and I started grunting to him. And then all of a sudden the buck that I ended up killing pops over the hill, and he comes straight to me, and it was picture perfect, man. I had rattled him in all the way across this valley, and he came in slow, came to like 20 yards and just turned quartering away.
Like, you right here, like,
picture perfect.
Right here,
yeah,
buddy.
Like, man, that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You know, no, I had a rough season.
It was good.
So it was,
it was meant to be.
Yeah, it was like middle, late November. I can't even remember the date right now. But yeah, it was incredible. And then I shot a doe after that, and it was fun, man. It was, yeah, it was refreshing to go,
yeah, yeah,
do something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's awesome.
So
that area of Kansas, like Northwest Kansas, is just,
mm-hmm,
it's, mm-hmm, awesome. We, mm-hmm, hunt there every year, and just like for like calling and decoying and like just highly visible deer. It's just,
oh, yeah,
like, oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun.
I'd like to try that open stuff in Kansas at some point. That's,
yeah,
that's really my style. I, mm-hmm, think I got to do it, yeah, at some point. But
yeah, I know you guys know Sam Soholt. He was,
oh yeah,
he came in right when I was leaving, right when Sean was getting there, kind of deal. And he kind of bounced around on some walking stuff out there and shot, mm-hmm, a good, really good buck.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he shot, yeah, a hammer,
crazy,
out there.
Yeah,
he used the, you know, the little pop up decoy or whatever,
right,
and just, yeah, we were talking. He came. We met up before that hunt, and we were talking just about how like you can just get aggressive, call, and I mean, the worst part about it is usually a lot of the deer are busted up because they just all fight,
yeah,
and they all,
yeah,
it's just, I guess it's just great, you know, buck to doe ratio, and so a lot,
yeah,
of competition,
yeah,
and it's special area for,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Kansas really is, in general, it seems like it's an awesome state for calling, decoying,
just so,
yeah,
open,
yeah,
yeah,
so open, and like you said, it's like it is just a healthy population of deer. There, as from what it sounds like too, sometimes there's not even a ton of actual deer numbers,
right,
it's just like, you know, there's a perfect amount of does, there's a perfect amount of 1-year-olds, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and then up. It's just like, seems like it has a pretty good balance of deer, and,
yeah,
you know, mm-hmm, I think they're probably pretty hard to get out in a lot of that open stuff for,
oh yeah,
for a lot of guys. So that's,
yeah,
cool.
It's one of those deals, like if you just, you know, you may not see a shooter or a big deer, and then all of a sudden, boom, there,
yep,
it is, and, mm-hmm, it happens just like
that's
that.
Sweet.
So,
well, and I remember I'd never hunted that area, so I've driven through there, but I was unfamiliar with how it hunts. And we're driving in there, and I'm like, man, there's like hardly any trees anywhere. Like, where are these deer at? They must all be in the river bottom. And they're not.
Yeah.
If you have a pasture that's just grown up with CRP or whatever, just,
mm-hmm,
some source of cover,
mm-hmm,
they're there.
Yeah.
Whether you believe it or not.
Yeah, you always go to assuming trees, just being from the Midwest, like, oh, yeah, they're bedding in the trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, I mean, when we go to North Dakota, a lot of times we're thinking, oh, yeah, they're in these tree rows. Nope, they're bedding in these cattail sloughs.
Yeah.
It's like, what? It's like crazy.
Yeah.
As long as there's, you know, good cover and shade and stuff, they'll bed, you know, where they're the least threatened, I guess. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like you guys have plenty of episodes for the next TV season then.
Yeah. Yeah. We did. We haven't really totaled them up yet. We're starting to go through everything, kind of figure out. We do 13 episodes for TV, and then
right,
we do 10 digital episodes online for,
yep,
you know, YouTube, Amazon Prime, that type of stuff. And so we kind of go through and sort and kind of organize them and stuff. But we got a good group of guys that, you know, we all hunt hard, hunt a lot. And, like,
mm-hmm,
it's one of those deals where we know you know, as long as we're all hunting and putting in our best, like we're gonna be all right.
Yeah, I can have enough content.
From a content side of things, mm-hmm. and so, you know, that's one thing that I think people have always appreciated from what we do, and I know what you guys do is it's real, it's authentic, it's you mm-hmm. know, it's we're showing the highs and the lows, and so,
right.
You know, what used to be an industry kind of driven by like the macho, egotistical, like, oh, I can't show a miss or I can't show me not
right.
hunting good or like whatever. I think it's the tide has kind of turned there and it's for the best. So,
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we all make a hell of a lot of mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
Like
every
a lot.
Time, whether we want to admit that or yeah, not. Right. Every time.
Some of them are like, oh, that one was more embarrassing than the last. Yeah. But yeah, yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we could have grown up watching some of that, I feel like we would have been better hunters in a quicker pace than growing up thinking there was big bucks behind every tree.
Right.
We,
yeah.
We were screwing it up somehow.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. It's like you have this expectation that I'm going to go out there and it's going to be like that. And
right.
it's like, most situations aren't like what you're seeing on the TV.
Right.
So it's,
yeah.
you know, you need to learn more from mistakes. I truly believe you learn more from mistakes than you do the success, you know.
Yeah.
When you mess up, you're like, hey, can't do that anymore. Got to do something different, you know. When you're, like you said, when you see that and you see others do that, I think that helps. It goes a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you screw up big, you don't forget.
Oh, especially when there's a camera and people there to see it.
Someone else witnessing you.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, now they have evidence.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. No, I think it's kind of cool, though. We've kind of evolved, you know, as hunters starting out. And, like, you know, we still do a variety of different type of hunts, as I know you guys do. And, like, new experiences, new, mm-hmm. you know, new hunts. And, like, obviously your expectations are all a little different on every hunt. Like, you know, we've gotten big into, like, the management side of things on
right.
our property in Missouri.
Right.
And that is super rewarding, like just doing all the work as far as, you know, planting food plots and like mm-hmm. managing, you know, doing timber stand improvement and like making the property the best we can, growing
right.
the deer the best we can. And, you know, not everybody can do that, obviously, but we still hunt. Like, we'll do, you know, we'll go out west and hunt, do some public land hunts, and
yeah.
or we'll hunt, you know, do a new experience, a new hunt. Or like, he was talking a moose hunt, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, his shoot a raghorn moose, like,
oh, yeah.
not
yeah.
better than that. Like, never shot a moose before. So, you know, it's just every hunt, you kind of have your own expectations. You kind of evaluate, you know, the situation and kind of set your standards that way. And
yeah.
I think that's how it should be. I mean, you can't broadcast one standard all across the board. So.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah, we were just talking about that about 3 hours ago.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, why don't you guys tell everybody, like, where they can find your stuff if they don't know, and then, yeah.
Yeah, you can find it on the Outdoor Channel Thursday nights. 9:30 Eastern time. We have Instagram, Heartland Bowhunter. Our Facebook, obviously, YouTube channel.
Where can't you
across,
find Heartland
yeah.
Bowhunter?
Yeah.
You guys know,
really.
You guys know the struggle.
Yeah. iTunes.
Oh, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
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 No, it's
search it.
Yeah.
You'll find it.
Just Google search it. You can figure it out.
Wherever you want to watch it, it should be there. And if it isn't, let us know. Yeah. You know, it's kind of one of those deals. We're in that business. Where
we need to bump up our YouTube following, so we need to do a hunt with you guys. So.
Yeah.
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah, Warb was, we talked about something, a hunt that you guys were doing.
Public Land Challenge, maybe?
Yeah.
Last
where was
year?
That at?
Michigan.
Michigan, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But it was something.
We did Minnesota the year before, and then Michigan
in
2019.
Yeah, it was something. We had a conflict there, and I was like, we were trying to send Drew, who you guys
grew up with,
and so I was like, Drew, go on this hunt. Come on with Warb. So we'll have to definitely get together and do it.
Have you guys figured out what you're doing for 2020 on that?
I don't think so yet.
We keep talking Indiana. Like, Indiana's a state we want to hunt this year.
Yeah.
I don't know if we do that for the challenge, but
yeah.
it's got to be somewhere where, you know, like Dan Infault, you know, he's kind of a mainstay. Like, you know, we're guys that everybody can get to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you can get a tag easily.
And you get a tag easily.
Tag easily and also, like, a state where there's a lot of hunters. Like, that's kind of the interest there. Is like, that's why we did Michigan, is, like, there's a lot of people that – you know, are viewing from Michigan, a lot of public land hunters in Michigan, and they, like, you know, I think the hunters there appreciate seeing all the different strategies that go into this public land challenge, because everybody hunts a little bit different, right? It's like, I like to hunt off the ground and still hunt around or spot and stalk or whatever, and everybody, you know, Dan sets up real tight to specific buck bedding areas. It's all different. I think that's the fun, and that's ultimately the challenge of it, is to see the different styles, I guess, and see how.
Just going to a state that, you know, a lot of people just don't go to. You don't think you're going to, and hopefully, kind of dispelling some of the myths around, you know, Michigan is just overrun with hunters, and there's not any deer there.
Right.
I mean, it was, you're not going to shoot a large antler buck there.
More than likely,
on a 1 week public land hunt.
Right.
But we were surprised by the the numbers of deer.
Ted and I saw a mature buck.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Ted real nice real buck. Yeah, he's 15 yards.
Really?
Yeah, I was filming him, and it was like, I could have had a shot at him, and he didn't from where he was in the tree. It's like one of those deals. But Well, cool, guys. Yeah. Appreciate it. It was fun swapping stories. And look forward to seeing the season. What's that?
I said you didn't really get to tell us many stories.
Oh, well, we'll talk more about them later, I'm sure. All right, guys. Thanks.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it, guys.